Hey, I'm Brett Podolsky, co-founder of The Farmer's Dog. We make fresh food for dogs. We started the company when we saw what a huge difference it made in my own dog, Jada, when she stopped eating ultra-processed kibble and started eating fresh, whole food. The Farmer's Dog food isn't fancy. It's just real food delivered to your door in pre-portioned packs. It's better for them and easier for you.
Get 50% off your first box at thefarmersdog.com/podcast. That's thefarmersdog.com/podcast.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Talk is Jericho, baby. Talk is Jericho. Talk is Jericho, mama. Talk is me.
All right, welcome to Talk is Jericho. It's the pod of thunder and rock and roll. And today, come on down. You're the next contestant on Talk is Jericho. That's right, Bob Barker, the legendary host of The Price is Right, is here on Talk is Jericho. He's talking about starting his TV start back in the 40s, how he became host of one of the biggest game shows of all time, The Price is Right. You'll hear how his contestants were really chosen, some of his favorite moments on the show, as well as his favorite games. Bob's an animal activist, got his entertainment start in radio in Los Angeles, hosted a live game show as his first ever television gig. So many stories about the golden age of television. Bob's been in the show business for over 50 years, 60 years, and you know we're going to talk about his guest appearance on Monday Night Raw when he was the guest host, and he and I went head-to-head. One of my favorite WWE memories. It's funny because we had all of these special hosts for a while. It was like Saturday Night Live where there was a guest host every week, and there was a lot of bad ones. I don't need to say who they are. But my favorite ones were always Ozzy, Mike Tyson, and Bob Barker. And at first I thought Bob was going to get eaten alive because we were in Chicago. People know how the Chicago crowd, they don't take fools lightly. And I thought, oh, they're going to eat Bob alive. But they did not. Bob had them in the palm of his hand within minutes, and we had one of the best times ever. Go on YouTube right now and watch The Price is Raw, WWE Price is Raw, Bob Barker and Chris Jericho. And, man, what a great time we had. What a great, great guy. He did this show a few months ago. Bob is, get this, 93 years old. That's right. Bob Barker is 93 years old. You could hear from this interview. It was over the phone, which is rare. You guys know I don't like doing my interviews over the phone. But with Bob Barker, you make exceptions to the rule. So at 93 years old, he's still very lucid, told great stories, and a true Hollywood treasure and a true Hollywood legend. And like I said, my favorite WWE guest host of all time. I remember standing face to face with him, and I was like, Barker, I'll take you on anytime, any place, anywhere. This is back in 2008 too, so Bob was like 82 or 83 at the time. Had the crowd in the palm of his hand. Great, great guy and an amazing story that he has. I'm very excited to bring to you a true legend, Bob Barker. But first, we're going to celebrate a legend in another field, talking about wrestling, and we're talking about Diamond Dallas Page celebrating his upcoming induction into the WWE Hall of Fame. Dallas is going in Friday night before WrestleMania. You know I'm going to be there. And to mark this incredible occasion, such an honor, he's holding a special Hall of Fame sale at ddpyoga.com/Jericho. He's so fired up about the Hall of Fame, he's giving you all you sexy beast listeners of Talk is Jericho, 30% off the DDP Yoga Now app and 30% off all DDPY related merch. Okay, so celebrate with DDP by jumping on board the DDPY program and living a healthier life. You guys have heard me talk about what DDP has done for me, and you're really going to hear it when the new Fozzy record comes out very, very soon. You're going to hear it in my singing because I'm singing a higher, more powerful than ever. That's all based around the core, which is what DDP Yoga has helped me with. That's another reason why I've had the greatest, some people say the greatest run of my career in 2016 leading into 2017. Never in pain, never hurt, because DDP has kept me loosened up and keep me fearless, giving me confidence. I'm really, really happy with my work over the last 18 months, happy with my singing, and a lot of that's due to DDP and DDPY. I want to thank him for helping me, and I'm telling you right now, I'm urging you guys can do the same as me. Just pick up DDP Yoga. And the best thing is you can do it everywhere and anywhere. You don't have to worry about going to the gym, finding out where a gym is, getting your car and going. You can do it in your house. You can do it backstage at a venue like I do in my hotel room, in a dressing room. Just open the app and get it, get started wherever you are and whenever you want. That app makes it so easy, and it's got a whole new set of workouts on it, so you'll never get bored. The app's also got tips for healthy eating and recipes to keep you on target. It's everything you need to live a healthier life. And right now, like I said, you can get 30% off the DDP Yoga Now app and all related merch at ddpyoga.com/Jericho. That's 30% off hats, t-shirts, yoga mats, heart monitors, so much more. Just go to ddpyoga.com/Jericho. Remember, this is the biggest sale ever on the DDPY program. Take advantage of it, man. Celebrate Dallas's induction into the WWE Hall of Fame. Celebrate if you're a fan. Celebrate if you're a peer like I am. Celebrate if you believe in his work. Get on the path to healthier living at the same time as well. Just go to ddpyoga.com/Jericho. That's ddpyoga.com/Jericho. Change your life today. Get in the best physical and mental shape of your life and do it today. Okay. Before we get to Bob Barker, there's something else that's been kind of taking the wrestling world by storm over the last few days since it was discovered, since it went up on WWE.com and YouTube. I'm talking about Southpaw Regional Wrestling. Basically, what happened was the WWE was going through its archives. They buy all these archives to put on the network, and they found this VHS tape from a regional renegade promotion called Southpaw Regional Wrestling. If you haven't seen it, go check it out. It's amazing stuff. And the Southpaw Regional SRW is very excited about this, finally getting some notoriety, doing a lot of press. And we're very excited today to have Southpaw's infield correspondent, Clint Bobski, is here to tell us all about Southpaw Regional Wrestling. Clint, it's great to have you.
Chris Jericho, very excited to be here to talk about Southpaw Regional Wrestling. What a great, great time it's been for the promotion over the last few weeks, over the last few days. From now, from this time, people are finally understanding what we have to offer. Some of the most exciting professional wrestling in the Eastern Hemisphere was brought to you by Southpaw Regional Wrestling, and we're very, very excited to be here. Chris, I know that you were a fan as a kid. I know that you're a fan now, and I just want to tell you that everybody who's been thinking about checking out Southpaw Regional Wrestling needs to go now to WWE.com. I'll go to YouTube and look up SRW Southpaw Regional Wrestling for the finest in pro wrestling action that you will find anywhere in the southern region of the United States or elsewhere.
Well, Clint, I mean, I'm really excited about it, and it's a lot of fun to see. Tell us about some of the stars that were involved in SRW and some of your favorite moments of your time there.
Well, Chris, I have to tell you right now that we are very excited because you've heard now in 1987 was a different time. We were competing with the WWF. Hulk Hogan was a great champion. We had a great champion as well. The charismatic John Johnson, who I thought should be called Jumpin' John Johnson perchance or Juicing John Johnson, but he would never have a nickname. He just wanted to be John Johnson. Had a lot of charisma. Didn't have a lot of charisma, actually had no charisma whatsoever. The kid was the shits, but he was forced upon us because there was a little bit of a scandal. He had some pictures of people involved with Southpaw Regional Wrestling, including Southpaw Regional Wrestling's commissioner, Dr. Craig Armstrong Smith III. So he was forced into a position, an unfair position, but I mean, man, that kid, he could move. He had a drop kick from the second rope that would knock your socks off, but my goodness, he had no charisma whatsoever. And I'll tell you what, you know what else his problem was? He used to grab my microphone. I didn't like it. When I'm the backstage infield correspondent, the backstage announcer, nobody grabs the microphone ever. That's my rule. No one grabs the microphone ever. And this John Johnson son of a bitch would try and grab my microphone at all times, and I just could not take it anymore. I finally had to cuss him out on live TV. You saw it. If you've watched SRW, you see that happen. I lost my cool. I lost my decorum. But that's what happens in the crazy world of SRW. You never knew what was going to happen. The finest professional wrestling action in the entire southern region of the United States.
Well, another fine kind of a feud that was going on was between Big Bartholomew and Mr. McElroy, who then
conned Big Bartholomew into signing the contract to win back his farm. And then we find out that Big Bartholomew never actually was pitted against Mr. McElroy. It was actually a swerve, and it was going to be Mr. McElroy's creature from the sea creature. Oh my goodness, what a denizen of Hades the sea creature was. We still do not know where Mr. McElroy found this horrible monster, this horrible creature. You see him in SRW, the look that he has, the face of a demon, the body of an Adonis, the green skin and the face of a lizard. Very scary stuff. And poor Big Bartholomew did not know what he was getting into. Poor Catherine Christian Joy. They lost their farm to Mr. McElroy in the end, because you just could not defeat Big Bartholomew. He could not defeat the sea creature. I mean, how can you defeat such a creature from Hades? We just couldn't understand where Mr. McElroy found this horrible creature, this sea creature. And in the end, Mr. McElroy ended up taking the farm of Big Bartholomew. It was a terrible thing. Big Bartholomew had to leave the territory. He went up to Stampede Wrestling and worked for Stu Hart up there. Afterwards, it was just a travesty of justice to see one of our biggest heroes in SRW, who was doing it for the USA, and he was fighting for all the southern countries. So that means he was fighting for Brazil and South America and El Salvador. Exactly, all the southern countries, everybody involved in the South. Big Bartholomew was for. He fought for the chickens. You see this? It was just a terrible travesty. Well, Clint, the thing is, we never got to see any of these matches because they were promoted for Lethal Leap Year. But in 1987, there was no Leap Year. So at the end of Southpaw Regional Wrestling, you see that there's no show because there's no Lethal Leap Year. I mean, are you saying that match still took place? Well, the thing was is that the Lethal Leap Year closed circuit extravaganza was booked for the Leap Year of 1987, February 29th. Unfortunately, there was no actual Leap Year, but the good news was that we had an actual show booked at the Legion March 2nd in Hog's Head. There was a free pancake breakfast before the show. We had a fine turnout. The first 100 kids that showed up got a SRW pennant. There was free parking. Air conditioning was included with the ticket. So we did end up having what was considered to be the Lethal Leap Year show. It was just not a closed circuit. And we did lose. Excuse my French, my Francais. We lost a shitload of money, and basically the whole company went out of business due to the fact that nobody could look at a calendar, and it just it really kind of destroyed everything. We promoted for months and months and months, and nobody looked at the calendar. How can no one look at the calendar? I can only do so much. Why didn't Lance Catamaran look at the calendar? Or Chet Cheddarfield? That's a son of a bitch right there. I never liked him. It was probably his job to book dates. It was his job to book towns. He didn't look at a calendar. I'm blaming Chet Cheddarfield for all of this. I'm blaming him for the demise of SRW, but we still did have the Big Bartholomew versus the sea creature in Hog's Head. It was a fine show. We had a fine turnout. 150, 175, 65, 37 people showed up, whatever it was. Lots of pancakes left over, but it was still a good time for the kids. Had a great time. The families would just drop the kids off, and we became a damn daycare half the time with these little brats running around all over the place and jumping into the ring and bouncing up and down on the bottom rope. And I would have to say, hey, you damn kids, get out of the ring. Get out of the ring, you damn kids. There's pancakes over there and free parking. So it was a tough time for the whole SLW promotion because nobody could look at the calendar. And as a result, we lost money and guys started leaving in droves. Tex Ferguson got in his Camaro and drove away. We never saw him again. El Barba Grande, he never even got on the plane. We don't even know what happened to him. Never saw him. Sent in a hell of a highlight video, as you see. Mr. McElroy, Big Bartholomew were there. The Sea Creature was there. Christian Joy was there. Pelvis Wesley ended up winning the Battle Royal to face John Johnson, but of course we never actually had that match because the whole thing was canceled because we didn't have any money, and it was a sad demise for at our peak we were drawing 15 to 20 shows a month, and we were doing at least 150-200 people a show. So you know that we had a fine fan base, a lot of people in Hogsburg, Kirtland, Mobile, there was a lot of people that would come see the show, cheer on our stars by programs, by popcorn. It was a golden era in the time for professional wrestling, and then everything fell apart. But now, finally, after all these years, we're getting a little bit more of a notoriety. We're getting a comeback, and you can check all of this out on YouTube and on WWE.com. And damn it, I miss those days. Damn it, I wish I was still there. Damn it, I wish there was still Southpaw Regional Wrestling. You're going to look at it with a tear in your eye and a smile on your face. So go check it out now. What can I say? Thanks to Clint Bobsky for being here. If you have not seen Regional Championship Wrestling, Southpaw Regional Championship Wrestling, go check it out. It's a hoot, as they would say. Lance Catamaran, Chet Cheddarfield, John Johnson, Tex Ferguson, Chad Too Bad, lots of great performers. And it's something that it's a treat. It's going to be a treat for you. And it's also going to be a treat to have Bob Barker here today on Talk is Jericho. And Bob, at 93 years old, still one of the most legendary guests we've ever had, and what a great storyteller. And Bob Barker, come on down. You're the next contestant on Talk is Jericho.
Here it comes from the Bob Barker studio at CBS in Hollywood. Television's most exciting hour of fantastic prizes. The fabulous 60-minute prize is right. You are first four contestants on The Price is Right. Now, here is the star of The Price is Right, Bob Barker.
And Bob, I got to tell you something. You are completely punctual, totally on time, 2 minutes early even.
Am I 2 minutes early?
Yes.
Well, I'll hang up and call back.
But that's such a rare thing for show business and in Hollywood, someone to call in early. That shows the professionalism that you had from doing this for so many years.
That's right. I'm well trained.
Well, I mean, it's funny because I had William Shatner on this show before, and he was the same way.
Was he?
Yeah, you come in through the system the way that you did, and you learn how to be a professional at all times. And it almost seems like the attitude of being late, like Hollywood people have, doesn't fly for guys like you.
Well, I started out in radio, and of course, it was a small local station. Everything was live there, and then my first television show was Truth or Consequences, which I began in 1956. And 1956, everything was live. And when you do a show like Truth or Consequences, you have to be on the money.
So how was that? I mean, because like you said, in the 50s when television first started,
yeah,
most of those programs were live. Is that correct?
That's right. That's right. That's right. I used to be doing Consequence. I'd wind it up, I'd give the contestant his prize, off he'd go, and I'd say, now, we have another Consequence in just a moment, but first, and I'd step over and do a live commercial. And then I'd step back to the microphone and say, all right, here we go, our next contestant, and so on. It was an adventure, but it was the only thing we knew in those days, and we didn't know how much easier things would be in the future.
And let me ask you that, because when you started, obviously, it's before the advent of television. And when television first started gaining prominence, becoming a thing, what did you think of it? Did you think it's something that could last, or did you think, what is this crazy new contraption? How was that for everybody in the show business at that time?
Well, my biggest thought was, I want to get on that. I came out here in 1950, out when I say here, Hollywood.
Right.
And I didn't have a job, and I didn't have an agent. I didn't have any so-called contacts of any kind. I was a right candidate to star. And my wife and I loaded everything in a cattle trailer, and wow, out we came. And I'll never forget, we arrived, there's a mountain here as you come into the city of Hollywood that you can look out over the entire city. And we looked out there, but you couldn't see it. The smog was so thick. And she turned to me and she said, "Barker, what have you gotten me into?" But it worked out.
So it was the famous story of you came to Hollywood to find your fame and fortune sort of thing?
That's right, exactly. We came out here, as I said, with absolutely nothing in the way of firm commitments. And believe it or not, within 2 weeks, we had a radio show and on a small station. And eventually we got it on the CBS station, a local, just local, mm-hmm. not network. And thank the good Lord, Ralph Edwards heard it. And he had sold Truth or Consequences to NBC on television, a strip show, 5 days a week. And he didn't want to do it himself, and he was doing This Is Your Life at that time. Mm. And so he was auditioning hosts in New York, and he was auditioning hosts out here, but he hadn't found the one he wanted. And it just happened. He was driving his two daughters to school, and they turned on the radio, and there I was. And Ralph liked my work, and he called me, and I went in for a series of auditions. And on December 21st, 1956, at 5 minutes past 12 noon, he called me. He said, "Bob, you're my man." And every December 21st after that, he and I had lunch together. And at 5 minutes past 12 noon, we drank a toast to our long, enduring friendship.
You know, I've hosted game shows before, Bob, and the audition process for a game show is hard because you have to basically pretend that the show is on. But it's very intimidating because you have the heads of the studio looking at you, no studio audience, and it's a nervous process trying to get that.
It is that, and I didn't do it just once. Uh-huh. I did about three auditions. I had to audition for Ralph and his people, and then, well, we had another audition for MCA. They represented Ralph. And then we had to do an audition for NBC. And by the time I finally got that phone call, I was almost a blithering idiot. I was,
yeah.
I was so excited about this possibility. I'd never done a national show, and I thought, man, this is it. I got to have it.
And it's such a great feeling when you get it, and such a horrible feeling when you don't. Was there ever any shows that you auditioned for that you came close to getting, but you didn't?
No, I didn't. After that, any show I did, there was no audition. They'd seen me on Truth or Consequences, and they either wanted me or they didn't.
And that made you from that. Explain what exactly Truth or Consequences was, because that's one of the most famous game shows, but it is from the 50s and 60s. They haven't never really remade that show, as far as I know.
Well, it was based on a game that Ralph and his family used to play at their home, and he was growing up on a farm in Colorado. Uh-huh. And he was the top radio announcer in New York, and when everything was live. And he was doing so many different shows that he had to have a driver awaiting him always, and he'd go racing to the next show.
Mm.
And he had the idea, he thought this game that he had played on the farm would work. He put it together, got it in a form for radio, and he had a producer and a director and an announcer and all that, put it all together, and most important of all, he sold it and got it on the air, and he was only 27 years old.
Wow, okay.
He was one bright guy. He was a fine host himself, and in addition to that, he was an excellent producer and a splendid writer. I had the pleasure of having him as a dear, dear friend over a period of years, and it was one of the highlights of my life.
Hmm. Now, who were some of the other game shows, like hosts? Was game shows something that at this point in time in television were pretty popular?
Oh, yes. It was really a glory period. I remember Jack Bailey on Queen for a Day. Old Jolly Jack. He'd get those contestants up there, and And they'd start telling, at first they would tell some funny stories, but why they wanted to be queen for a day. But somebody told a sad, sad story in one, and from then on, everybody would get up there and try to have the worst life to tell about. And Jack had listened to all this, and they'd probably start crying, and he'd dry their tears. There, honey, this, you know, and Jolly Jack, he made it fun no matter how bad the stories were.
Right.
That was Queen for a Day. Art Linkletter, he was doing his show. Art Linkletter was a top host, and his wasn't really a game show. It was just an audience participation affair where he'd go out and talk with everybody. And he was best known probably for his interviews with kids.
Yeah. That was always his thing, because kids say the cutest things sort of thing, right?
Right. Kids under 8, under 9, 8 or 9 years old or younger, they can be wonderful contestants if they'll talk.
Right.
But if you ask a kid, what do you like most to eat? He says, I don't know. Well, get away from him, because if you're talking with 4 or 5 kids, he'll ruin them all. They'll all realize all I have to say is I don't know, and they're out of the deal. But I learned to do it on shows itself. I mean, by that, I didn't have anything. I was on national television the first time I interviewed a kid, probably. No,
wow.
I had in radio years before. Mm. But in any event, I thoroughly enjoyed children. On Truth or Consequences, we had hilarious consequences with kids. I don't know how much time you want me to talk about this. But,
hey, man, you talk about whatever you want. I'm loving it.
One of my favorite consequences of all time involved kids. We had invited a little league team to come to the show.
Uh-huh.
I mean, the first ones, the very young little kids,
right,
8, 9, 10 years old, and these boys, and they came in their uniforms, baseball uniforms, always a big deal, and they didn't know it, but we had 2 girls planted in the audience who were professional softball players. They were a little older than these boys, but not much,
mm-hmm.
And one was the catcher, and the other was a pitcher. And this pitcher, they were sisters. This pitcher was just unbelievable. She could throw a ball like you couldn't believe, a softball pitcher.
Yeah.
So I went out in the audience before the show, and I looked around for I wanted to find just the right boy for this, and I did. Boy, I got a winner. And I chose him to be on the show, and then I chose another kid from the Little Leagues to be on the show, Little League, to kind of make him think, well, he was, it was just a thing where 2 of them were going to participate.
Right.
Well, they came up. Then I said, now I'm going to get a couple of girls. And as I said, these girls were planted in the audience, and so I chose them as if I'd never seen them before in my life. And they came up. Now, this audience didn't know anything about any of this either. And we got them up there. Oh, it was so fun. I took this one boy, the one I had really chosen as the victim. And I said, I'll tell you what. We're going to play right here on the stage. Now, I said, you are going to be the batter. Well, all right, I'll bat. And I said, now one of you girls is going to be the pitcher, and the other girl is going to be a catcher. And I said, now let's see. Maybe I'll take you. You be the pitcher, as if I'd never known which one was the pitcher. And I put her clear across the stage, and I put the catcher back there, and then I put this little boy up to bat.
Uh-huh.
And I said, all right, we're ready to go. Play ball. And this pitcher, I'm telling you, she wound up and she threw that softball. It was like a streak of lightning, wham, over the base, and this boy just stood there. And I said, well, why didn't you swing at that? He said, that's a phony ball. I said, that is not a phony ball. And I took it from the catcher. I said, there's the ball. Look at it. That's the ball. It's fine. He said, well, then that girl has a phony arm. I'm sorry. Every time I think about it, it was just hilarious. This boy was so wonderful. Oh, God. We really had fun with that.
But see, that's part of being a great host is you can lay back and let the kid be the star. And knowing
I'll tell you right now, I'm going to do some bragging. I was the best contestant selector of all time. I could go out in an audience and we'd have something that we needed somebody just right for, and I could find them.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Hold one Plinko chip flat against the board and let it go. Here it comes. Looking good.
Right there.
Looking good. Looking good. $10,000 for Davis. And he has three more Plinko chips.
What is the secret to being a good game show host, Bob? Is there a certain style that you have to bring to making the contestants feel comfortable?
Well, I think that, first of all, you have to feel comfortable yourself.
Mm-hmm.
I think if you don't enjoy people and if you are just there to get the thing over with, get your paycheck and get out of there, it ain't going to work. I think you have to enjoy it. Well, you can tell from the fact that I could hardly tell that story that I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
I thoroughly did. I never got up in the morning, ever, and thought, oh, gosh, I don't want to go to the studio today. I loved Truth or Consequences, which I did for years, and I loved The Price is Right, which I did for years, and I thoroughly enjoyed them both. And I think the people realized it, and they kind of joined me. And another thing that I did that I think is very important, and that is that during the commercials, I stayed right on the stage and kept talking with the audience.
Oh.
And had fun with them and kept them up. Some hosts will go off and rest during the commercials, and somebody else will be out there,
mm-hmm.
and the audience kind of quiets down, and by the time you go back, you have to get them warmed up all over again. I went from the time that I started, I was on the stage and I had fun. And I think that's the important thing.
Well, and that rubs off on the audience, like you said, because you're
Absolutely.
Setting the tone, you know?
That's right.
Another thing that I learned when I was hosting, that the producer, a guy called Ken Warwick, told me, he's like, you have to be and you mentioned this earlier, you have to be the shoulder to cry on when things go wrong. You know,
oh, yes.
you're never making...
Sorry? When I did Truth or Consequences, there were plenty of opportunities to cry. Oh, as I said, everything was live.
Right.
And if something didn't work, for example, well, you didn't just say, well, all right, cut the stop tape and do it over again. You lived with it. And we had things go wrong. One time, we used to do what we called reunions,
mm-hmm.
where we'd get some young serviceman back from overseas and surprise his mother, and or we'd get a husband and surprise his wife, or we'd get two sisters or whatever,
mm-hmm.
and bring them back together. And we were going to do a really dramatic reunion, and we had this woman... Some friends of hers helped us get her in the audience as she thought she was there on a tour.
Mm-hmm.
And we had surprised her. We brought her son. He was in the service, and we brought him back from overseas. And so we were going to have this tour that this woman was with come in to our studio in the back and be backstage just as this boy was to be introduced.
Right.
And so then I was going to get her out on stage. I was going to go over to them and choose one of the guy, people from the tour and bring her out on stage. And then all the lights, she and I are going to be talking, and all the lights are going to be go out, and one spotlight would stay right on us, and the sun would step into that spotlight and surprise her.
Okay.
And so it didn't work.
What happened?
Well, I got the mother out there beside me, and then we were ready to bring the lights out, except for the spotlight. And I don't know what whether they hit the wrong switch or what, but every light in the place went out. Now here we're on the air. It's live television, and there's not a, you know, it's completely black. And I had to keep talking, or I knew they'd think their television sets were out. And I kept talking, and I had fun with it, and got a lot of laughs. And we finally got the lights on, but it was like a couple of minutes, and that's a long time in the darkness.
Well, sure. What are you saying? Like, there's no lights.
Well, I didn't want to tell them that the boy was going to be there or anything like that. You know, I mean, I didn't want the audience knew what we were going to do. I set it up before.
All right. But
finally, they got the lights on, and we got the boy out there, and we had a good reunion. But I got a letter that I loved. I got a letter from some lady in the Midwest, and she said, "Bob, you do your best work in the dark." Oh, it was funny.
When you started doing Truth or Consequences, you're talking about how TV started becoming such a nationwide, you know, a phenomenon. Did that catapult you to becoming a very famous guy at that point in time?
Well, no, I was doing what I did all my life. I had a show, a radio show,
yeah,
where I did, it was audience participation.
Oh.
And when television came on, of course, I wanted to be on television.
Right.
And television was so new. Here in Hollywood, I suppose in cities all over the country, there were crowds of people standing in front of store windows watching television. They didn't have television at home. You know?
Really?
Yeah, sure. It was new. It was new.
Wow.
Particularly when they were playing a football game.
Oh, okay.
And USC or UCLA was playing a football game, the street would be crowded with people who didn't have television sets and they were watching the football game. Sure. It was, I'm telling you, it was new.
Were they expensive at the time to buy a television set?
Yeah, I think they were pretty expensive
okay.
for those days.
Gotcha. So only certain families could afford it, and the rest would just go, like you said, gather around and watch.
Well, they wanted to see what it was. It
yeah.
was completely new. And pretty soon, everybody had a television. So I'll tell you what, I had a commercial on television before I had a television set. That's right.
Yeah.
I used to have a friend. My wife and I lived in an apartment, and upstairs above us, Rosie McHarg was his name. He was a clarinet player and played with some big bands, and he was playing with Red Nichols and his Nichols and his Pennies or something like that, I think, on Hollywood
name.
Boulevard at the time. And he had a television set, and my wife and I used to go up and watch television with him, so we got one.
Watch your commercial on his set.
No, we weren't. My commercial was live.
Okay, gotcha. Because that's how commercials were. Like you said, there were live reads on the air.
Everything was live.
Yeah.
There was nothing to tape. Yeah.
Wow. Let's talk about the advent of Price is Right. I mean, one of the biggest game shows of all time, still very, very popular. Was this something that you were involved in from the start, Bob, or did they call you in on the project?
Well, it had been on the air.
Oh, okay.
In radio with Bill Cullen as the host.
Right.
And it had been very successful. But it was not at all the show that I did. All it was a group of contestants, say four or five, at a table, and they bid on different things, and Bill had as much fun as he could with them.
Mm-hmm.
And it went off the air, and was off for a while. And Mark Goodson, who owned it, he was brilliant. And he was going to revise it for television, which he did. And And he had seen me on Truth or Consequences, and he wanted me to host the show. And I was still doing Truth or Consequences, but we were doing it in syndication by that time. Hmm. And I could do it because it was on CBS Network. Okay. And so he invited me in to see what he had done with the show. And you know, he said, what do you think? I said, I think it'll work. And he said, I think it'll work too. But we didn't know I would do it for 35 years.
I mean,
but it was a hit from day one. It was a top-rated daytime show from the first day, and it was a joy to do. It was fun to do. And incidentally, now don't misunderstand me, Mark Goodson was always very generous with me when it came to money.
Mm-hmm.
But I found out Bud Grant was the head of daytime at CBS at that time. And later Bud and I became friends. And Bud told me that he had told Mark Goodson that he would buy Price is Right if he could get Bob Barker to host it.
Oh.
And if I had known that when we talked money, right, I would have made a lot more money than I did. Right.
You hardballed him a bit.
I told Mark Goodson about that. He laughed. He thought that was a great joke.
But that was a thing. I grew up in the 70s, so daytime TV was a really big popular thing.
And
I remember I would watch Price is Right every day, especially during summer vacation. And like you said, it was such a fun show to watch. Here I am, like an 8-year-old kid watching Price is Right, but it's fun. It's fun.
Oh, yeah. We had great fun on the show. And it was another show where you never knew what was going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a lot of fun doing it.
How would you guys, was it really a random selection of the contestants? Or did you kind of know?
No, what they did, the line formed to come into the show well in advance. And one of our producers would go out and just go down the line and talk with everybody there and make some notes and go in and make the selections. And he would try to choose people he thought would be fun. That was the whole idea.
Because people would just go nuts. Like, that was always one of the best parts of the show, because the camera would be moving.
Oh, yeah. Well, they didn't know their name would be called.
Just zooming in on people. They'd be freaking out.
Yeah.
I mean,
did you ever see the most famous incident in our history?
What is it?
Well, I was behind the doors. I didn't see it myself. I was behind the doors when I was just before my introduction.
Right.
And Johnny Olson was the host at the time.
Yeah.
And I mean, the announcer at the time. And he called the names of these various people. And he called this one pretty young lady's name. And she had a very low-cut dress. And she jumped to her feet and jumped up and down. And as she did that, both of them came in right out of her dress. And she didn't know it. And she came right on down. And, of course, the audience was screaming. And I didn't know it because I couldn't see. I was behind the doors. And so Johnny then introduced me, and I came out. And I thought this audience was just, you know, loved me. I thought, oh, Barker, they love you. And I finally realized no audience would ever like me this much. And I said, Johnny, what has happened out here? And Johnny said, Bob, this girl has given her all for you. And I knew what had happened. Oh, it was funny. That played on various occasions around the country. It was undoubtedly the most famous single incident in Price is Right history.
Were there certain contestants when they come up there, like, and obviously I can probably know the answers, that you want them to win because they're so likable?
Oh, sure. I always wanted them to win. They didn't always win, of course, but it was fun when they won, and I loved winners.
What were some of the biggest winners on Price is Right?
In money?
Money or prizes. Like, was there somebody that came on and just, like, every single thing that you could win that possible, they won?
Well, we had one game that we didn't play very often, on which you could win three cars. And we had, I can remember at least once, they won all three cars.
Wow.
And that was pretty exciting.
Wow, that's, I mean, that's to think about that, to be able to walk out with those prizes. With some of those games, too, like, what were some of your favorite games to play, or for the audience to play?
Well, I like that particular game, because you could get just tremendous excitement, because the way I would build it, we had three doors hiding behind each door. There was a car.
Mm-hmm.
But no one knew that.
Okay.
And so everybody came to the show hoping to win a car, I think.
Right.
And here I had this contestant, whoever it was, playing this game. And I'd say, now I have a thrill for you. Look at this. You can win this. And they'd show this first car. And the audience would go wild, of course, like they always did for cars. And she'd get very excited. And I would build that just as much as I could. And then I'd say, now, in addition to that car, you can win this car. And boom, there was the second car. And now they're off the, you know, they're out of their seats practically. And then I'd say, but that's not all. You can win this. And boom, the third car. And by that time, the audience was just absolutely crazy. And it was a huge success, no matter whether she won the one car, two cars, three cars, or no car, because of the way you could build it, you know?
Yeah.
If you build it right, by the time you got to that third car, the audience was... the whole place was on the roof, practically.
The show business element of it. Here's got this, and then we got this, and then we got this. Bingo, right?
That's right.
Was there ever any games that did you have any idea for some of the inventions of the games? Or was that just guys would like for the new ones that came out, did you ever have any ideas of games to play?
Oh, I made some suggestions, yeah. I can't even remember what they were, but I had two or three, four games on the show over the years. Everybody did. Everybody came up with some ideas, and some of them were pretty good.
Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/rs10 today.
Try to win some money on the big wheel, John. $2.95. I assume you're not spinning anymore. She's not.
Let's talk about one of your most famous accoutrements, Bob. Your famous microphone. This.
Well, it was actually very practical. Doing a show, and particularly like Price is Right, where there was so much excitement, and the contestants had so much to get excited about. Why, they were all over the stage, you know. They'd jump back three or four steps, or they'd do this, that, or the other. So I had that long mic so I could keep them on, because they were the show. You know, their excitement, we wanted to get every bit of it.
Right.
I had that long mic so I could reach them when they jump around like that. And then beyond that, it was long and it was real skinny, because we didn't want to block their faces.
Oh.
If they had a big mic, you'd block their face. And this skinny microphone, I could have it right in front of them, and you could still see their faces, because their reactions were such an important part of the show.
What a great piece of trivia. I mean, that makes perfect sense.
One of those, I had three of them, and one of them is in the Smithsonian now.
It's so synonymous. I can think of you and Gene Rayburn having those long mics, and that's about it. Like, it was created just for a game show host, it seems.
Yeah, I haven't seen them on any other show either.
It's classic. Like, I want to see a singer of a rock and roll band using one of those one time. You and I met when you were hosting Raw, WWE Raw, and we were going through this phase of having a guest host every week. And right. And when you came in, and this is I wrote this in my book, that Bob Barker was the best guest host we ever had in the history of Raw.
Well, thank you. I'm delighted that you did that. And incidentally, I was awarded one of these, looks like one of the championship belts, you know.
A Slammy or something like that? Is it called the Slammy Awards? Yeah.
Yeah, I guess. Because I was selected that year as the best host they had. That's right.
Well, I mean, and what the reason why is we were in Chicago, which is notorious for having this hardcore crowd. They're always very loud, but sometimes when guests come in, they kind of like, you know, they boo them or just dismiss them.
And, well, I got the championship belt because I wasn't booed.
you weren't, but that was, I was actually sat back and watched a master class on how to work a crowd, because I was thinking those guys are going to tear Barker apart, and you came out there and right off the bat had them in the palm of your hand.
Well, I'd been before audiences for a lot of years before I ever got out there.
Yeah. That's what I mean, though. It was just such an amazing. I was like, wow. How did you get involved with that? Were you a wrestling fan? Are you a wrestling fan?
No, not particularly. Mm. But they just called me and asked me to do it.
And you thought it'd be an interesting.
However, I know a lot more about wrestling than most people. I'll tell you why.
Why?
When I got out of the Navy and went back to finish college, I. Was married by this time, and I wanted a part-time job, and my father-in-law produced or promoted the wrestling matches in Springfield, Missouri.
Mm.
And he had me run the concessions there, popcorn and soft drinks, you know?
Yeah.
And so I saw a lot of wrestling before I ever came up to Chicago to do that thing with you.
Wow. Do you recall any of the guys that were there at that point in time that were wrestling there?
Well, I'll tell you who was there before the rest of the world didn't even know him. Was Gorgeous George.
Oh, wow.
Remember Gorgeous George?
Absolutely.
Oh, he was a showman if I ever saw one. And he was there. I'll never forget one stunt he pulled. I don't know what happened, but somehow he actually got a little scratch on his face of some kind, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And this guy, he made a big thing of it. His opponent would throw him down to somewhere where nobody could see him. He'd reach up there and he'd spread the blood all over his face. Mm-hmm. So it looked like he'd been on the verge of being killed. And he had them absolutely out of their minds. He did. Some of those guys were pretty funny.
Well, yeah, like you said,
some of them were good athletes too.
Well, athletes and showmen, good entertainers. Yeah. And what I if you remember this, when you hosted the Raw, we had the Price is Raw, which was we were doing kind of a Price is Right thing with some of the guys and girls on the show.
Right.
And at the time, I was like this really evil bad guy, and it was very serious and always angry, and really dropped into the character of it. And I remember that you and I got face to face, and I got mad at you, and I was like, Barker, I will take you on any time, any place, anywhere. And you went, Chris, don't make me take you over my knee. Now, Bob, I am a seasoned professional, much like yourself, but I almost burst out laughing, and I remember thinking, I can't laugh.
Now, wait a minute. You were splendid.
Yes.
And I might add, you had a beautiful physique, and you were a very good athlete. I've talked about you, that interview that I did with you down there in Contestants Row, where we got, without you, I probably would never have gotten my belt for the best host.
We tore the house down, Bob, because, like I said, I was this hated guy, and no one could get to me except for Bob Barker. And
I remember I told you, now listen, I'm going to take you over my knee.
Yeah.
And Thank you.
And I took, I had my...
I'd have about as much chance of doing that as I would of going to the moon.
People were so into it. They're like, we want to see Bob Barker versus Jericho at WrestleMania. And I was like, Barker, I will take you on anytime, any place, anywhere. Like seriously, like, I want to fight Bob Barker. And people just ate it up. They loved it.
Oh, they loved it. Well, I'm so, why didn't you, I don't know how I, I've done an interview with you before, haven't I?
Well, never for my show, but we did a few things afterwards on Raw, and you made a couple, like, appearances and stuff like that. But yeah, that night was a tremendous night that you and I just really worked together to take that crowd on a ride.
Oh, yes. I've complimented you time after time to people about how splendidly you did that and got up there and acted as if we were we were really gonna I've been out of my mind.
I had my Price is Right name tag that said Chris on it, and I just had it on my chest, like on my bare chest.
Right on your bare chest,
and I took it off and I crumpled it up and I threw it on the ground. And you're like, Chris,
I remember the whole thing.
You better pick that up, Chris.
I wish I'd known this, and I would have brought it up myself. Oh, yes, I've complimented you. In fact, I've watched it and wondered about you, and here I am talking with you and didn't even know it.
I need a better agent. They should have explained it to you better.
You get your publicist and tell him, get with it.
Let me ask you this, Bob. Now that you're not performing with Price is Right in front of that live audience, do you miss that connection with the crowd?
Yeah, I do. I kind of do. I do. People often ask me, what do you miss most about Price is Right? And I say the money. But that isn't what I miss most. I do miss that. I don't sit around and cogitate on it or anything like that, mm-hmm. but it was stimulating.
Right.
It was challenging and stimulating, and I think you need that in life.
Well, and you never know, like you said, you never know what you're going to get with that live audience.
No.
And you have to really be a professional and work with it to get them cheering if they're not, to get them to calm down if they are, whatever it may be.
You have to roll with it and make the best of it.
Yeah, the instant gratification too of the live crowd, you know. Bob, we're getting ready to wrap up here, but I just wanted to touch on the fact you've been very outspoken about the treatment of animals, and that always became your thing. Are you still very involved in that?
Oh yes, absolutely. I probably spend more time on animal things now than I ever did, and I'm happy to say that we're making huge advances. The animal rights movement, when I started, for one thing, it was mostly women.
Mm-hmm.
There weren't very many men involved. And over the years, I've seen men become probably as involved as women are. And animal rights people, somebody would say, well, he's an animal rights activist. Well, what is that? And they didn't even know. But mm-hmm. now, everybody knows. And I describe the movement like a huge snowball that's rolling down a mountain, and it's going faster and faster and getting bigger and bigger, and ain't nothing going to stop it. It's been heartwarming to see it happen.
What was the reason why you got so involved in that?
Like millions of people, I was just born with a love for animals. My first memories include animals. I always loved animals. And when I was a kid, I used to pick up strays, and I would try to, if they were hurt or something, I'd try to nurse them or help them. It's natural for me, just like breathing. I just love animals.
Right.
And a lot of people do.
Right, especially now. So, and you've become the face of that in so many ways. Last question, Bob. How big was it when you did Happy Gilmore with the famous line of "The price is wrong, bitch"? Hilarious cameo from you in that movie. How did that come about with Adam Sandler?
You know, they just called me and asked me to do it, and I said, sure, I would do it. And you say big. I did that movie, and every Price is Right that I taped after that movie was seen, there'd be people in the audience wanting to ask me about Happy Gilmore, mm-hmm. and particularly young men. Young men, they loved that movie, and they'd say, "Could you really whip Adam Sandler? Could you really whip Adam Sandler?" And I said, "I'd say Adam Sandler couldn't whip Regis Philbin." They loved it. They loved it. I don't know whether Regis has ever heard about that or not. And you know the funny thing is, I'd say, Adam Sandler couldn't whip Monty Hall, or Adam Sandler couldn't whip somebody else, but they wouldn't laugh nearly as well as it. Regis Philbin got the biggest laugh.
It's a funny name, Regis Philbin. Regis Philbin. Bob, I want to thank you for doing this today, man. You're on the top of my list of guys to talk to, and show business legend and a great guy. Thank you for doing this today.
Oh, thank you. And thank you for telling me about our
altercation.
Yes, I've talked about that time after time with people and paid you wonderful compliments, and here I am talking with you and didn't know it. But I wish you well. I hope you continue to have great success at whatever you do.
And remember, Barker, I will take you on anytime, any place, anywhere.
And you just remember, you'll have to catch me.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
I want to be in shape, but I just don't have a lot of time to exercise. Does that sound like you, even though it was my mouth saying it? My mouth? Truly from the Team Tiger Awesome Show's mouth? Well, if it does, I want to tell you about a new weight loss program that's turning my life around. It's called Don't Eat Nachos. Over the course of 28 DVDs, you'll learn all about the process of losing weight by avoiding cheese on chips for one less meal a day. So if you're eating nachos twice a day, boom, we're going to bring your count down to one and cut those calories in half. Eating on the plan could not be easier. Shake for breakfast, shake for lunch. Nachos for dinner? No, have some sensible pizza or a fistful of gummy worms instead. It's time to take control of your life and not eat nachos quite so often. To find out more about Don't Eat Nachos and what it can do for you, listen to the Team Tiger Awesome Show right here on the Jericho Network.
All right, subscribe to the Team Tiger Awesome Show on iTunes, and you get all those hilarious fake ads every single week. This week, a very timely subject is how to have sex with pro wrestlers. So there you go. It's hilarious. Go check that out. One of my favorite shows on the Jericho Network. And while you're hitting that subscribe button on iTunes, please also leave the Team Tiger Awesome Show a 5-star rating and review. In fact, leave all the Jericho Network podcasts 5-star ratings and reviews on iTunes. I can't tell you how much that helps us all out. We love the feedback on the episodes. It also helps us with advertisers so we can keep giving you all this great content for free twice a week. So hit up iTunes and get yourself automatically hooked up to Killing the Town with Storm and Cyrus. They got Raven on this week. Actually, this week they have Raven on last week. This week they got a tribute to Bad News Allen, Bad News Brown, if you're a WWE fan from the 80s. And what a charismatic, tough dude this is. You're going to love the stories about Bad News. Keeping it 100 with Conan, always killing it. This week they had Josh Matthews on there. Hurricane Helms, of course, Disco arguing with everybody. It's just one of the best shows that I've heard. And of course, the latest huge smash hit, The Raven Effect. Oh my goodness, they're finally getting this all figured out. Mr. Skin is on this week from the celebrity website, Mr. Skin, and also Busby Berkeley, Chad Damiani. Raven's got a great whack pack of his own. Go listen to that. And if you want to be terrified and get your socks scared off, 5 days a week, Beyond the Darkness on the Jericho Network. Go check that out. The paranormal tales are going to drive you crazy. And just a reminder, Talk is Jericho participates in the Amazon Associates program, an affiliate advertising program designed to provide a means for me to earn fees by linking to Amazon.com and affiliated sites. You can link to Amazon at podcastone.com by clicking on the killer deals button at the top of the page. Go buy whatever you want, and Amazon will take care of everybody, okay? And also, thanks to all my other great sponsors that you can find on the killer deals button, ddpyoga.com/Jericho. code. Remember, you get 30% off the DDP Yoga app and all DDPY merch. The Books, go to Books.com and use the promo code Jericho to get 20% off your order and free weekday shipping. And to BetDSI, register at BetDSI.com. Use the promo code Jericho25. That's my last name. And the number 25 to get $25 for free plus a 200% bonus on your first deposit. Go win some cashola. All right. Thanks so much to Bob Barker for being here. Like I said, a true show business legend, a total gentleman, 93 years old. Okay. I hope I'm that lucid and that cool and that smart when I'm 93. Thanks also to Clint Bobsky from Southpaw Regional Wrestling. If you haven't seen it, go check that out on WWE.com or YouTube. It is hilarious. Boy, taking you right back to 1987, the regional promotions. And Clint gave us all the information on that. And thanks also for listening to the show. And keep listening for the 60-second AP News headlines coming up next and coming up on Friday. Another one of my oldest friends in the wrestling business, King Haku, is going to be here. What a great guy. I met him when I was working in Mexico. He took me under his wing. We were in Japan together, WCW together, WWE together. Great guy. It's his podcast debut, at least his full-length podcast debut. I think he's done a couple shorter ones. But he is, wow, what a great guy. And ask anybody, the toughest man in the wrestling business, maybe even the history of the wrestling business, at least the modern day for my generation. Haku, King Haku, is going to be here. He's going to be here on Friday. We'll see you then. In the meantime, and in between time, stay hard, stay hungry, peace, love, and hugs, and remember, yeah, boy, come on down. You're the next contestant on Talk is Jericho.
You can download new episodes of Talk is Jericho every Wednesday and Friday at podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.